Okay, turn to Exodus chapter 15. Last week we were in chapter 14 and we saw, how God provided in the parting of the Red Sea, the miracle that he performed there, how he directed the Israelites over into that area, and then even it wasn't just about saving the Israelites and getting them away from Pharaoh and his armies. It was about judging Pharaoh and the land of Egypt, as with the plagues that they just have went through. But it was also about Israel and teaching them to trust in God. After all, they had just seen all the plagues that had taken place and how God had performed all those things, miraculous things that had taken place. And they come here out of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, or getting to the Red Sea, and then here comes the army behind them, and they're afraid again. And at first, they seem to seek the Lord. Lord, you know, we're stuck in this jam. What's going to take place? And it doesn't take them very long, and it says in the next verse that they complained to Moses. You know, you brought us out of Egypt. You brought us here. We would have been better off that we stayed in bondage as slaves. At least we were alive, because that's better than dying out here in the wilderness. Seems like a lack of faith. And it was. And we say sometimes, well, come on, Israel, you should have done better than that. Maybe sometimes we talk about this, we need to look inward as well, because many times we need to do better than that as well. Anyhow, so the last couple of verses kind of sum it up in chapter 14. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw great work which the Lord had done in Egypt, both in the plagues and this miracle here, and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Even the fact, I didn't mention, probably should have, even the fact that with the Red Sea parted, what does it say? They crossed on dry land. How do you get dry land at the bottom of a seabed? I can't even get my grass to dry up when it mows, you know, when it rains, thunderstorms. Yet, even in that, it's like a miracle within a miracle. Even the little details God takes care of. They didn't have to cross through mush and, you know, slop through the mud. They crossed on dry land at the bottom of a seabed that had been wet for years. So even there, God provided for them. We get to chapter 15, and come to this passage, verse 15, verse 1. Then Moses and the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying, and we'll get into this poem, which was actually a song. Put yourself in their position. They just had this situation arise where they thought they were all going to die at the hand of the Egyptian army. God parts the Red Sea. They cross. Miraculous things take place. The ocean comes in. They're saved. They're happy, right? You would be happy, right? God has just brought you through this tremendous situation. You've seen miracles performed. Whew. You get out on the other side, and there's no longer that threat. And they're praising God for what he's done. And that's what this song is. We're going to take a look at this song. The song focuses on the Lord. You'll see the Lord's name mentioned 10 times in this 18 verses here. Let me read a little background here. The structure of the song sung by the nation contains four stanzas or four sections and one line in closing. In stanza one, in first section one and section two, we'll see that it ends with, "They sank." That's an interesting phrase, "They sank." And then in trying to read this little print. Stanzas 3 and 4 end with reference to God's holy place. So there's a lot to be observed in this section. So section 1, which is 1 through 6, introduces God's powerful victory. So let's read those. Actually, I'm sorry, 2 through 6. I will sing to the Lord. He has triumphed gloriously. Imagine yourself in their position and praising God for what he's done. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song. He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the sea. The depths have covered them. They sank to the bottom like a stone. That's an interesting phrase at the end. So you see, the first verse of this song, first stanza, is kind of a summary of what's taken place. This is what the Lord has done, and obviously this is what's on their mind. He's just brought us through here, and the enemy who was after us is vanquished, and God has taken care of them. And you can imagine the joy that they're feeling here. The next section, stanza 2, graphically repeats the victory and then inserts the arrogant and vengeful assertions of victory by the enemy to show how puny they were. Interesting. Let's read that next section. Your right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, has dashed the enemy in pieces. And the greatness of your excellence, you have overthrown those who rose against you. Interesting statement here. Those who rose against you, he has overcome. You sent forth your wrath, it consumed them like stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The floods stood upright like a heap. The depths congealed in the heart of the sea. Here's a statement that kind of leads to the talks about the ground being dry, congealed, hardened, to the point that they can cross through instead of getting stuck in the mud down there. Even that they noticed. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. Remember, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, the people's heart was hardened. Why did we let them go? We need to go after them. And this is what they said, I'll overtake, I'll pursue, I'll divide the spoil. Their desire shall be satisfied on them. I will draw my sword. My hand will destroy them. This is what they were facing, or this is what they thought they were facing. The sea covered them. They sank like lead. There's that phrase again. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. What happens to a stone or lead when you toss it in the water? Bloop, right to the bottom. And this is how this section ended. Section 3 concisely summarizes the victory after asking an appropriate question. We'll see that in a minute. Further, since the victory was essential for Israel's rescue, the stanza also introduces them. So let's take a look at that. 11, 12, and 13. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like your glorious holiness? And this is the question that they're talking about. Who is? None other. There is no other. And remember when Moses first went to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, I don't recognize your God. I don't know him. He's nobody. And in each of those plagues, or in each section of plagues, Remember, God had mentioned, you will know my name. You will know that I am God. You will know that I'm the creator of the universe. You know that I'm all powerful. And that lesson has just been learned, probably the last of the lessons for the nation of Egypt. Not only have they been through the plagues and the destruction and, if you will, financial loss and even what?
Death.
And even, you know, loss of crops, loss of, remember, green is gone in the land of Egypt, the destruction that took place there. And then on top of that, gone is Pharaoh and their army, their mighty force to protect them. So Egypt is left in desolation and somewhat helpless, but God has been victorious. So the question, who is like you, O Lord? Who is like your glorious holiness? Fearful in praises, doing wonders, and they have seen wonders, haven't they? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You in your mercy have led forth the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them in your strength to your holy habitation. Here's the first mention of habitation, where they're headed, and the mention of Israel, the nation that was chosen, that God has specifically delivered. Stanza 4, 14 through 17. Stanza 4 picks up and expands on Jehovah's leading the people to their divinely assigned home and the consequent fear by other nations as they hear of Israel's dramatic rescue from such a powerful enemy as Egypt. Let's read on. Verse 14, the people will hear and be afraid. This is not the people, the nation of Israel, but the people who hear what's going on. After all, remember, Egypt was the mightiest nation there was around, and God had defeated them. The people will hear and be afraid. Sorrow will take hold of the inhabitants of Philistia. Then the chiefs of Edom will be dismayed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, will take hold of them. All the inhabitants of Canaan will melt away. These are the nations that they are going to deal with as they come into the promised land. Yet in this song, they realize that the fear of God and what he's able to accomplish is going to overtake them. And it does at times. Fear and dread will fall upon them. By the greatness of your arm, they will be as a stone. What's a stone do? Nothing. What can a stone do? Nothing. The stone is helpless. Now I lost it. Till your people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over, whom you have purchased, you will bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. In this last verse is looking forward to the promise that God made to Abraham, right? I'm going to make of you a great nation. I'm going to provide of you this land. And this is looking forward to that promise and being reassured that God will keep that promise. The last verse here, verse 18, kind of sums up the whole thing. The Lord shall reign forever and ever. A lot of this, you could say, you could apply, right? As God brings you through a situation and you've seen his provision, we could say a lot of things, these things, right? Praise God for what he's done. And many times we worship him and praise him like that. But I want to continue on. Excuse me. And then we have this like narrative here at the end. For the horses of Pharaoh went with his chariots and his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought back the waters of the sea upon them, but the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. So we have this narrative summary at the end of this song that kind of summarizes, tells us the whole story that went on. It says, verse 20, then Miriam, the prophetess, okay, who's Miriam? Who? Moses and Aaron. Remember, Moses and Aaron are both, at least as far as when they were before Pharaoh, because Moses was afraid to talk, so God says, take Aaron with you. Aaron is his brother, and Miriam is their sister. It says, Miriam the prophetess. Miriam is the first woman to be given this honor. She herself claimed the Lord had spoken through her. We see that later on in Numbers. She apparently played an important role in the rescue events, because the prophet Micah says that God delivered Israel by the hand of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Interesting. There are other women in Scripture who are referred to as prophetesses. Can you think of one? Hannah. How many?
Hannah.
Hannah, yep. Wait a minute.
Anna.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Anna in the book of Luke. Can you think of another one? Deborah. Yep. Deborah's another one. Okay, the other two are a little more difficult. There's Huldah in 2 Kings. Oh, yeah, you got it. Isaiah's wife in Isaiah chapter 8, and Philip's four daughters in Acts 21. So if you want to look up something later on, there's something to look up. So it says that, back to the verse. And Miriam, the prophetess, sister of Aaron, oh, there's the answer right there, took the timbrel in her hand, and the women went out after her with timbrels and dances. And Miriam answered them, saying, sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea, which is the first verse of the song that they sang. Obviously, we get the picture here that there is rejoicing in the camp of Israel, what God has brought them through. They thought they've just survived the army through God's hand. So they're praising him. The whole camp is joyous and praising God. It says at the end of chapter 14, so the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. So there's a picture of where we at with the nation of Israel. Just crossed the Red Sea. God has performed this miracle. They're rejoicing at God's provision and what he's done for them. We get to verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Is water important? Yeah. By then, they're probably out of water, and they're looking for something to drink. Now that when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it is called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? There you go. How long did it take them?
3 days.
3 days. Huh? Pardon me? Yeah. 3 days. And they've forgotten what God has done. The people that are on this journey saw the plagues of Egypt, saw how God had provided, how he had separated them, provided for them, how he brought them out of Egypt, how they had spoiled the land of Egypt, allowed that to happen too, how they came to the Red Sea and they were trapped and they thought they were all going to die, and God provided by parting the Red Sea. And 3 days later, they don't have a drink left in their canteen, and all they can do is complain. When they should have been saying, Lord, I'm out of water. How are you going to provide? And waiting on God to provide, right? You ready? How long does it take us to forget? Do you think that there was a purpose for the things that God had instituted with the people that were going to make them remember? Remember the three things? The Passover and the redeeming of the firstborn and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Those are there so they what? Remember, because we're so forgetful that we can't remember from, well, sometimes from day to day, but we can't remember the last time that we were through a difficulty and God provided. And here Israel shows us that it's happened again with them.
John,
yes.
Did they think about, like now we would say, well, you should have just prayed about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Help me understand. I mean, I know they shouldn't have complained, but it wasn't the same as it is for us now.
Yes. I'm looking back to when when they were stuck by the Red Sea. First they sought the Lord before they complained to Moses. So they knew that that's something that they could do. Granted, their relationship was a little different, but still they could pray to God, right? They could still seek his face. They could still ask him for guidance or provision, whatever it might be. So that's what I was looking back for. I can't find the verse right now. But yes, they could have done that. So the people complained against Moses, "What shall we drink?" So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and when he cast it into the waters, the waters were made sweet. Pardon me? 14:10. Okay, that's where it says. It says they went to the Lord. The waters were made sweet. So God provided by showing Moses a tree, and he cast a tree into the waters, and all of a sudden the bitterness went away. Do you realize that there is no tree known to man that would do something like that? It wasn't the tree that made a difference, was it? Just like it wasn't Moses' staff that parted the Red Sea. It wasn't Moses, it wasn't his staff. It was God's provision. And here God, through his grace and mercy, provided for them again, even though they were better at complaining than they were at seeking the Lord. So he provided for them. The waters were made sweet. Here's where I wanted to get to today. There he made a statute and an ordinance, for them, and there he tested them and said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. And there he made a statute and an ordinance for them there, and he tested them. Why did they run out of water? Huh? To test them. Why do we go through difficulties or trials or struggles or problems? Huh? To grow. But the part of the growing is the testing. Let me read this to you. He tested them. This is testing. To subject to difficulty in order to prove the quality of someone or something. Here's a couple examples. Precious metals, gold for one. How is gold tested? Okay, by fire. It's melted down and then tested for purity. That would be, if gold had feelings, that would be a difficulty, right? An athlete runs in a race after training. What's the purpose of the race? To see how effective the training's been and how good that individual is at that task, right? That's what the race is for, right? It's a test to see how well I do compared to other people. Okay, it's testing me. It's showing me where I'm at. If I wind up the last one in the race, I know what. I got to train some more, right? I got to work a little harder at this because I haven't finished where I thought I should be. Get where I'm going? As we go through tests, trials, struggles, whatever it might be, whether it's health, finances, relationships, whatever it might be, it's not for no reason, because God is in control, right? First, we got to start with that. Do you believe that God is in control? Yes. Okay, if God is in control, his word tells us that these things take place for our benefit, for our good, for our learning. So when we're tested, like the example we have here, when we're tested, we need to not complain or ask that three-letter word, which is, why? Why do I have to go through this? Why is this happening to me? We don't ask that. We shouldn't be asking that. We should be asking, Lord, for whatever reason this situation has come upon me, help me through that. I'll look to you. I'll keep my eyes on you, and I'll trust in you. And teach me what you want me to learn. That's the testing part. God says, I will test you. I will try you so that you can see where you land. Do you need to work on our faith more? Yes, we do. I'll just answer that for you. You don't have to answer. We all need to work on that more, to trust him more, to be able to say, we talked about Wednesday night, I'm sorry. In Psalms 37, it talks about the word trust there. And that word means, remember? Anybody here on Wednesday night? It means what? Like being able to trust in reckless abandon. Being able to trust to the point that it doesn't matter what happens because God's in control and I don't have to worry. I don't have to be concerned. God will take care of me. Well, I gave him the picture of jumping off a building. If there was a net two stories down that you knew would catch you, would you still be willing to jump off that building and have faith and reckless abandon to do something like that? Nope. Yeah, that was the answer of most of the people. No, I don't care if there's a net there or not. That's what the idea of trust is. Trusting in God to the point that, let go. I don't have to worry about those things. God's in control. He will take care. He's shown me what he wants me to do. As we grow closer to the Lord, there's things that we understand that are not beneficial, so we give those up. But I don't have to worry. I follow the Lord. I do what I know he wants me to do. And that's all I have to worry about. The testing. God tested them, and that was the purpose of them running out of water. At this point, is God testing? The part that sometimes catches us is how soon that happens to us, especially when God brings us through a trial or struggle, and many times it's not very far behind that we fall. excuse me. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, so they camped there by the waters. What did God provide them shortly after that? More water than they could drink, and palm trees to rest under. Imagine that. God can provide for not only our needs, but way more if we'll just trust in Him. Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.